I have had a rather adventuresome month.
Started out working about 90 hours a week on elections. Then it went to doing a recount trial in Brooklyn, driving through a snowstorm, which I didn't quite think I would make it, particularly once I hit New York City, who doesn't really navigate well in snow. Then I got called for jury duty on a capital murder case. Now, we don't have the death penalty in New York anymore because the Court of Appeals struck it down as we talked and did our lesson on criminal law, but they still have first-degree murder. That was the jury trial that I was waiting to be selected on. They asked me a billion questions and then decided at 5 o'clock tonight to dismiss me. I'm thrilled they did, because I really don't want to spend 3.5 more weeks determining whether someone ought to spend the rest of their life in jail. I wish I didn't have to spend 3 days with them making that determination, which they probably could have made in about 3 minutes, since they read off a whole list, and you're in the air for the jury duty rituals. They read off a whole list of people and say, if you know any of these human beings, please let us know. Of course, I have to raise my hand. The judge had read off about 60 names. I didn't know 2 of them. Because of the fact that I was a county legislator in Schenectady and I practiced law there most of my life, I know most of the players, including the judge, the district attorney, the defense attorney, pretty much everybody in the room that wasn't a party. I did not know the defendant, thank God. After I told the judge, and he made me do it in open court because he made everybody, you would have thought they would have said, okay, you can go now. 3 days later, I'm still sitting in the box waiting to get fit. So that was the reason that 4 o'clock he told us, cancel everything because it's going to be another at least 2 hours, which would have meant that I would have been getting out right about now. Hence, I sent out the email after having to get permission to walk into the hallway of the courthouse because you can't use any electronic devices in the courtroom. Get dismissed to go outside, type the email, class is canceled, to all of our undergrads, didn't get a chance to hit the same button for the grad students, and then the judge comes back and says, oh, by the way, we got a jury, you can go home. So that's the reason we got multiple emails. I apologize. Glad to see you all. I hope you all had a wonderful Thanksgiving. I missed you terribly. And I want you to all know that my thoughts were with all of you. Okay. Tonight we're going to do land use. We'll talk about that. But before we go, one other kind of administrative matter. Anyone wants to do an extra credit project, it is due next week. By the end of class. Actually, by 12 o'clock midnight next Thursday. So if you want to do it, if you want to hand in your extra credit project, please get it to me by midnight next Thursday. If I get it after that, I can't do it. Okay? So please get it to me, whatever you're doing, by midnight next week. Okay? Everybody clear on that? Okay. Land use. Last time, we talked about how to convey property. Conveyance is taking something from one thing to another, one place to another. Or in this instance, from one person to another. So if I want to sell you land or gift you land, or lend you land, it is a conveyance. Under New York law, remember, the statute of frauds requires any such activity to be in writing. As a result, you have formalities on how to convey land. They follow the acronym CMBR. Remember, Commander. CMBR stands for Contract, Mortgage, Deed, and Recording. Those are the four elements. They will be on the final exam. The four elements that allow you to convey real property. First is the contract. This is a written instrument. Remember, it's got to be done in writing. That written instrument says how, what are the terms, how are you going to convey that land. Remember, that written instrument describes the property that you're going to convey. It describes the conveyance. That means, are you going to sell it to somebody? Are you going to gift it to somebody? Are you going to lend it to somebody? And yes, you can lend property. Okay? It's generally called a lease. We'll talk about that next week. But that contract all says all the particulars. Remember, the highest and best use of the land is a fee simple absolute. That will not only be told in the deed, but it will be told in the contract. All the terms of the conveyance are in the contract. Now, most people recognize that land is so valuable. Remember, wealth, power, and life. It is the most valuable thing we generally buy and sell. Land generally requires other people's money to finance it. You know, it was that guy who used to be on TV. How do you get rich? OPM. Other people's money. That's a wonderful thought, but that's what a mortgage does. A financial entity, usually a bank, but it could be a mortgage company, could even be a private individual, will lend you money to buy the property. And they will take a note from you in return. That mortgage is considered by law as real property. It gets attached to the deed and recorded. Remember, there's a whole bunch of different types of mortgages. Most of them are traditional mortgages, whereby you will finance the property for a period of time, generally 30 years, but it can be short as 15. And you will amortize, and you pay that off over that period of time, usually in equal amounts, and as a result, eventually pay it off. One of the things to remember, people like to buy land, people like to mortgage it, even if they have the money, because you get a tax benefit on your interest for taking out a home mortgage. Okay? It's now been limited even further than it was on the new tax law. It's not unlimited, but most homes that you buy, I think the last time I heard it was like $800,000, you get some degree of a tax benefit on it. For a regular house, $400,000 on it. But at the end of the day, most people will get a tax benefit on their mortgage. You only get it on the interest, not the principal. So as a result, because banks front load their interest payment, they want to get the interest first before they recoup the principal, your first payment of $1,000, say,
is $999.99 interest, so you get that full tax deduction on that amount. Your last payment 30 years later is one penny in interest and the rest in principal. So over time, your tax deduction goes down. That's one of the reasons why people either refinance or get a home equity loan, because it starts the tax deduction all over again. Why? Because your interest versus principal shifts on a new loan. Okay. Your deed is the instrument that records your ownership interest. Remember, there's two critical parts to a deed. A deed is not a contract. A deed is merely evidence of your ownership, your rights in the real property. And it has two elements to it. Words of purchase and words of limitation. The words of purchase says who is getting the property. So it will say to A, to Alan, to Beatrice, to whoever is getting the property. The words of limitation is how they're taking it. Do they have limitations on it? If it's fee simple action, it's very simple. It's to A and their heirs. No limitation. That means it's perpetual and forever, and you get all rights. If there's a limitation, like A for life, which creates a life estate, that's the limitation on it. Or to A, so long as they don't turn it into a dry cleaner. That's a fee simple determinable. Okay? That means there's a limitation, because if you turn it into a dry cleaner, you go back. Okay? The deed specifies all that. And the deed, unlike the contract, which is signed by both parties, both the seller and the buyer sign the contract. The deed is only signed by the grantor, which in this case would be the seller. Okay? Lastly, we don't beat up four-year-old kids anymore. It's a good thing. We instead record all these documents, because people know how to read now, with the county clerk. That county clerk will show the whole free world, and by the way, all these documents in 99% of the jurisdictions are now on the internet, show the whole free world who owns the property. You no longer beat up the four-year-old so he can tell you, yeah, John owns that property. That was the day I got the property kicked out of it. No longer have that. You just go on the internet and find out that John owns the property by doing a title search on the internet. Those records are maintained by the county clerk. And remember, not only is the deed filed, but the mortgage is filed too. Because you want to know that you don't own the property itself, you and the bank together do, because they have a security interest, a lien on the property. Okay? Tonight, we're going to talk about land use. Remember, you have the easement rights plus time. Why? Property is so valuable. Not only do you get to exclude, possess, use, and transfer, but you can do it for slices of time. That's because real property is so valuable. But, unlike other sources of property, your rights have been held not to be unlimited. Society has said property rights in real property can have certain limitations. Not a lot of them, because we still want, remember that highest best use of the real property? That's a societal goal. Because it's one of the most expensive things that people own, they don't like to be living in it. But in order to primarily protect that investment, society, against people who might actually degrade the value of your property by the way that they're operating theirs, society is limited in a little bit. The first thing we're going to talk about tonight is the law of nuisance. This is going to be broken up into three elements tonight. The first one we're going to talk about is nuisance, but before we get there, in our mission between governmental control and personal property rights, we're going to talk about title searches. Oh boy. I don't know why Tinkerbell invaded me again. Title searches are critical when you buy a piece of property. Why? Because you want to know that you're buying what you think you are. Title searches lead to title insurance. When you buy a piece of property, you'll also buy an insurance policy to say when that person sells you that property for $500,000, that they are selling you what you think they are. That they have the right to sell it to you, that they have the right to sell it as they are saying they do. Not just that they're the owners, but they own it in fee simple absolute as you are buying. A piece of property that doesn't have those elements is worth less. So to protect your investment, you will do what is called a title search, which means you'll hire a company. Generally, you don't do this yourself. You'll hire a company to look in and search the county clerk's office, go back 4 generations and make sure that that piece of property that you're buying from Joe was sold to Joe under the rights that he thought or thinks he's selling it to you. That title search will then, that title company will write an insurance policy for you that'll say if somebody else comes up and says Joe didn't have that right and your property is not worth what you thought, that title insurance policy will pay you the difference. So if you thought the house was worth $500,000 and it's worth $50,000, you get $450,000 from the title insurance company. Now, title insurance is a critical aspect, but it's become less and less important because of the nature of the internet. Because all these documents are now readily accessible, they can write a title insurance policy which is more certain and for less money than they did before. Why? They know what the risk is because they've done the background on the front end. When I sell you an insurance policy to protect your automobile, I don't know what your risk is going to be. I can look at your experience as a driver. You're like my lovely daughter, Crash, who's totaled 4 cars on me, who I love dearly, but every time I look, the car's got a new dent. Okay? I pay $7,000 a year in car insurance. Oh my gosh. I'm lucky they insure me. She's wonderful, she's safe. In Washington, D.C., I do not give her a car. I'm worried she'll run into the president or something, then I'll be really in trouble. At the end of the day, you don't quite know as an insurance company what your risk is going to be. Take a look at these factors. Actuaries who are people who are accountants who look at these factors will say, yeah, that's probably what the risk is, and we'll charge it this much in a policy. With a title insurance policy, you can limit that risk. They cannot limit your risk in health insurance or in property and casualty insurance, like fire insurance or automobile insurance, because you don't know what event's going to happen. But you can limit your risk with title insurance.
Why? Do a better title search. Okay? And that limits the risk. Okay?
These searches protect the buyer. These searches protect the quality of real property. They're valuable and they're important. It's why we do recording. Okay. And they relate to land use. As I said, there's four major areas in land use. Nuisance, which is going to be our first discussion. Then you have trespass. And then you have zoning and planning. And lastly, eminent domain. Our principal case, we're going to do two of them tonight. One I'm just going to talk about, the second one we'll act out, is on eminent domain. Okay? The first one will be on trespass. Okay. What is nuisance? Remember, your rights in your property. Exclude, possess, use, and transfer. Okay? Plus T for time. Okay? They allow you to use your property basically any way you want. There's one major exception to that. You cannot use your property to hurt your property rights. Okay? I can't use my property rights to hurt your property rights. It's a class of rights. And the law comes down and says, if somebody's using their property to harm someone else, that's called nuisance. And it's what we call actionable, which means you can bring a court action to be able to stop it. When you look at nuisance, somebody using their property to injure your property rights, there's two types of nuisance. This makes sense. There's a private nuisance. That means I have one piece of property, I'm next to your property or adjacent to it, and by using my property, I'm hurting yours. It's just me and you. Just two property owners. One is using theirs and another is hurting the other. That's a public nuisance. That's a private nuisance. A private nuisance is substantial interference with the private rights to use and enjoy land produced by either intentional or unreasonable conduct. Okay? Strict liability is applied. What is strict liability? That means if I can show you are using your property to hurt mine, you are liable. All I gotta do is show that you did it. What is one of the most famous areas of private nuisance? I have in my backyard a gigantic pool that my wife built. Water. First started going back to work, kids were grown, she wanted to buy the kids a pool. Our yard, our backyard is on an angle like this, okay, it's about 45 degrees. We had to build a cutout, we couldn't put in an in-ground pool because of the end, water kind of rolls down the hill. So we had to put in an above-ground circular pool. The cutout actually cost more than the pool. So we built this pool. Well, what would happen one day if Bob was playing catch in the backyard and I suddenly tried to catch that bass because I'm so tired and crash into the pool and hundreds of gallons of water go down the hill into my neighbor's yard and wreck their yard and foundation? Guess what? What did that create? A nuisance. I can have a pool in my backyard. I can use that pool in my backyard. I can play catch in my backyard. All those things are fine. But when I play catch, crash to the pool, the water goes downhill because I've now made a hole in the pool or crashed through the side of the wall and washes out my neighbor's yard. Guess what? That's a nuisance. They can sue me. I have, on the side of my yard, a very big storm sewer. Gigantic ditch. Jim's calling it the Gulf. Matter of fact, I shared it for years with Nick's grandparents. That gully fills up when there's a really bad storm full of water. It's a storm sewer. That's what it does. Okay? Most of the time, it's dry. If I decide one day, you know, I don't want that water in my yard, I'll plug it up. And I plug it up and the water comes in and runs over everybody's yard, guess what? I've created a nuisance because of my actions in my yard. If I use my property to injure another, the most famous cases on these are usually landscaping. I turn around and I want it to make the land even because I want to mow my lawn easier rather than having the hill on the back. If I do something like fill it in, and all of a sudden that causes somebody's backyard or somebody's side yard to flood because I changed the water table, I've created a nuisance. I have used my property. And these are all private nuisances. Journal. It's as simple as that. I am not doing anything illegal. I'm not doing anything nasty. Often it's unintentional. I don't want to do that. I mean, certainly when I wanted to catch that pass, I wasn't intending to crash into the pool. Just, well, by the way, it doesn't happen, but if it did, okay? And all the water came out. You've seen it on TV. They have television commercials where the guy crashes into the pool. That is a private nuisance. What is a public nuisance? A public nuisance isn't where I crash into the pool and wipe out the neighbor's backyard with all the water. Oops, Bob made a mistake. It's where I'm using my property and it hurts the whole town, whole bunch of landowners. The public nuisances have generally been held to be by businesses. Okay? Frequently by pollution. Anybody here ever take the thruway south and see about 15 miles south of here a very big tall building with a big slide that goes underneath the thruway? Okay? One of the most famous cases on public nuisance related to a facility that was the predecessor of that gigantic slide. It's called Atlantic Cement. It was in Coxsackie, New York, just south. Atlantic Cement, Coxsackie has a lot of quarries with limestone. One of the things you need to make cement is limestone. Crush it all up, and what that slide does, by the way, it transfers all the limestone. But when in the processing of the cement, they have to actually ignite it and burn it. Waste products out. And it blows up smokestacks. If you drive by that facility, you'll see some smokestacks going. Okay? White powder smoke. Right. Well, Atlantic Cement employed almost every one of the people who lived in Coxsackie. It was the number one business there. But every morning, someone would see on their windowsill a little bit of refined white dust. Why? Because as the
Atlantic cement burned the material that it had to in order to make the cement process. It would go up the smokestack and then filter back down in the town. Now, most of the town people didn't care. That's where I work. I don't want to put them out of business. We're doing the best we can. We're using the best technology. It is what it is. I don't go outside with a windshield blowing the wrong way, so it's fine. Get my car washed, so when it's covered with white powder, guess what? I just washed the car. Okay. Wasn't a carcinogen. It was just a nuisance. Now, Coxsackie, like many other towns, saw substantial growth. As the capital district got bigger, so did Coxsackie. And more people started moving there who didn't work for Atlantic Cement. These people were getting annoyed that their window sills were covered at times with white powder from that damn cement plant. They brought a lawsuit, which was very controversial in the community. Why? Because they were afraid they were going to close them down. And one of the causes of action that the lawsuit brought was to close the cement plant. That would have meant a lot of people would have been out of work, and it wasn't popular in that community. The judge, like so many other judges, decided he was going to split the baby in half. I got to do something to prevent this pollution, and it is a pollution. After they had testimony that they had the most advanced scrubbers at the time, this was in the 1970s, they were taking as much of the white powder, which is limestone, out of the air as they could. They built the smokestack as high as they could and not cause other environmental damage. So what's the judge to do? Was he going to throw all these people in Coxsackie out of work by saying, you can't operate that plant anymore? He decided to do something, as I said, to try and compromise. It is the most famous public nuisance case on record. What he did was say, okay, Atlantic Cement, you can continue to operate your plant at the highest and best environmental standards that exist, because they proved to him they were doing that. You don't have to go out of business, but you are, through your operations, causing harm to citizens of the community that have nothing to do with this plan. So what they ordered the Atlantic Cement to do was to make an annual payment to all of the people who didn't work at the plant. They literally had to write a check every year to the people who didn't work at the plant who could demonstrate that they had little white powder on their windowsill or car or house. Atlantic Cement eventually went out of business. Why? Because more and more people moved in. They had more and more litigation, they couldn't make a go of it, and they left. Okay? The new one today, that Kevin's environmental technology being what it is able to prevent as much stuff going up the smokestacks, but Atlantic Cement set the standard that we're not going to close you down, we're not going to enjoin all your operations, but we're going to make you pay for the damage that you're causing. That damage was a public nuisance. Okay. If you have a nuisance, you need to prove it. Yes, Bob crashed in the pool and the water wiped out my foundation. Okay? That nasty Bob, he should have been paying better attention. He used his property to create a nuisance. I can sue him. What can I sue for? I can sue him for money damages. My foundation was damaged. You damaged my foundation.
Or I can sue him to stop him. Do not put a pool in your backyard anymore that can crash. Okay? You got to put in one with, you know, post and steel or something. Okay? That you won't crash into. Or you can do both. So you can have money damages, injunction, or both. That's your remedies with nuisance. Okay. That's part one. Part two. We talked about nuisance. Now we're going to talk about trespass. Okay? And we're also going to bring it back to title searches that we just started. Okay? What is trespass? At its very element, unlike nuisance, which you do not need intent for, a nuisance can be accidental, like Bob crashing into the pool. I didn't intend to do it. It was an accident. It's negligence. Okay? That's different than intentional. With trespass, you need to intend to do it. Okay? Now, the intent standard on trespass doesn't mean you have to intend to trespass. But that, you just have to intend to be where you are. And if your intent to be where you are is trespassing, that has met the elements. What is trespass? It's a physical interference. It's an invasion of someone else's property. Unlike other types of violation of property rights, you don't have to show damages. If there is a nuisance suit, you have to show to recover that I actually hurt you. You can't sue me for a nuisance just by putting that pool there. You can sue me if the water from the pool comes in and damages me. But just putting that pool there, I have a legal right to do it. And if you just keep praying, the water may never come to you. Okay? But with trespass, you don't have to show that you were damaged. You only have to show that the act occurred. This is the grumpy old man concept. Get off my yard! What is one of the first elements of your property rights? What's the E? Exclusion! You can't be there! Right? Right? Get off my yard! Trespass is an element of exclusion. Okay? It's one of the longest held property rights. Again, it's got to be intentional. The very definition of trespass at common law, any intentional and unprivileged entry onto land owned or occupied by another. We'll get to unprivileged in a minute. But if I intend to be there, what if I walk out of your yard and I mistakenly think it's mine? I don't intend to trespass. That still meets the intent. Why? I intended to walk to that spot. The fact that I don't know it's your land is irrelevant. Equally, you can trespass by an instrumentality. Go back to Pearson v. Post. Remember, if that case had a situation where the farmer shot onto the property
usurper. That would have been trespass. Remember, one of the critical elements was the fox ran on the public land. If it was still on his land, okay? Ludwig still had that fox in his yard. Ludwig Post, right? If he still had a fox on it, and then Jesse Pearson shot out of that barn, that'd be trespass. Even if he never stepped on the land. Why? The bullet he fired would constitute trespass. You can trespass with an instrumentality. Okay?
In the 1950s, the federal government came up with what we call the Blue Skies Doctrine.
It was actually created by a guy by the name of Nelson Rockefeller before he became governor of New York. He was in the Eisenhower administration, and there were all these aircraft flying over people's houses. Remember, you have property rights to the center of the earth and to some place in the sky. Back then, the thought was you had it to the end of the universe. Nelson Rockefeller said it's not a really good idea to sue United Airlines every time they fly over your house. Why? Because technically that would have been a trespass. Right? If you have the right to go to your house, they can't fly over it. The federal government came up with this Blue Sky Doctrine to say, you do not have the right where airplanes fly. Okay? It doesn't go that high. How high does it go? It's a tougher thing. It's not an absolute fixed standard. In New York City, where they build skyscrapers, which are 1,700 feet, at least go 1,700 feet, right? If you are next to the airport and planes come in 1,000 feet over your house, you probably aren't going to win a lawsuit. You don't live in New York City, okay? You don't have buildings that are 1,700 feet. Yes?
So I have a question about trespass rights to your colleague.
Yeah.
So same thing for speaking with your friend.
Yeah.
If you notice that your neighbor's yard.
Yeah. Correct. It absolutely is. And if you step on his land, you've trespassed not only just for Frisbee. It's the grumpy old man standard, get off my yard. So if you toss the football and your guy is like Bob, he doesn't catch very well, goes through his hands and out of his yard, guess what? You've trespassed.
Yeah. The Blue Sky Law is interesting. He already is. Becoming more popular, uses becoming more frequent.
That's a very good point, Nick makes. Drones are causing us to reevaluate what is a blue sky law and the appropriateness of it. If I turn around and fly the drone, there have been people who've flown drones to look in your window. They have cameras on them. You may be coming out of the shower. I was doing that, people would be shocked and want to cover their eyes. But I can tell you other people want to see some things of that. At the end of the day, that's trespass. Now, how high do you have to fly? Drones are prohibited from invading commercial airspace. They're prohibited by law from doing that. Why? They can bring down a plane. So, Nick is right. This is causing us to reevaluate what is trespass and what can we do. Okay? One of the things that people like to do, particularly, is fly their drone over their vacation home. You know, take it on the beach, see from it. While it's over the water, clearly that's not owned by anybody. But when you fly over another person's home, are you trespassing? Could be, as yet to be decided. There's a lot of legislation pending in the state legislature to control drones, say where they can fly and what kind of damages you can have. Okay.
What is the intent?
As we said, intentional acts are required for trespass. If I'm walking down the street and I go onto somebody's yard knowing it's somebody else's yard, that is a trespass, no question. Okay? Well, if somebody forces it, it's another issue, but it is technically a trespass. If I'm walking down the street, however, and Nick decides he wants to play a game on Bob and picks me up and throws me, you have to be really strong, throws me out of that yard, I didn't intend to do it, Nick threw me there, is that a trespass? Not of Bob, but of Nick. Why? I didn't intend to go there. So Bob didn't trespass. Why did Nick? Absolutely. Bob behaved in instrumentality. Okay? Instead of throwing the football behind, he threw Bob. Okay?
So the intent only means you intend to go there. Okay? There's some exceptions to that. We'll go. Okay? Entry means it's always a physical invasion. The mere fact I'm looking onto your property, okay, even with a drone that is not above your property, is not a trespass. If I'm sending my waves into your house, that is not a trespass. Really weird, but it's not a trespass. Okay? It requires a physical entry. And it generally requires it on the land surface. Okay? So, the drones are kind of rewriting this a little bit, but generally, land surface. Now, another way you can trespass, why? Because you own the property in the center of the earth. If I dig a tunnel under your property, that's a trespass. Okay? The question only becomes is above the land, because that's a little more sketchy an area. Okay? Now, as we said, trespass, unlike other torts, does not require actual damages. It can be nominal. You can bring a suit, get off my yard. You can enjoy me. You can turn around and sue for damages of $1. Okay? Because you didn't really experience any. Or you can do both. Okay? What are some of the exceptions?
First and foremost is privilege. What is privilege? If John has a home and he knows Bob is a master plumber, and he's got a problem with his sink, and John calls up Bob's expert plumbing and says, Bob, come over and fix my sink. And I come over and we find leaks where we didn't know we had pipes. That happens. And he's really unhappy over the work he did. He can sue me for breach of contract. I didn't fix the sink. But you can't sue me for trespass. Why? Because he invited me onto the property. If you invite the person, if you agree for them to come onto your property, that is privilege. Someone who enters with the landowner's consent is privileged. Privilege can also be found with necessity. If I am chased by a raging bear and I run into Wilkinson's yard, okay, to escape the bear, I have a trespass. Why? Because nobody wants the bear to eat Bob. Wouldn't be a pretty sight. So you're allowed to go on there to avoid that. Similarly, if I'm a police officer, or a firefighter who is there in my duties, okay?
Not the mere fact I'm a police officer. Police officers don't have the right to trespass. But if they are performing their duties, they're chasing a suspect, they're saving a cat from the tree, whatever they're doing, they're putting out a fire, guess what? They have privilege. Okay? Again, your remedies, threefold. Money damages, injunction, or both. The injunction is a special item. There's a special term. What do you do when you press the button to get the CD out of the CD player? What's that called? Eject. Okay? If you want to get rid of something, you're a fighter pilot, you want to leave the airplane because it's all shot up, and you know it's going south, you eject. Well, if somebody's trespassing on your property, you sue them for what is called ejectment. That is your injunctive remedy. Okay? Now, yes.
If like you can sense like somebody coming and having a problem for 10 minutes, but then they go upstairs and see you dead for $5, would that like lay out that they didn't consent to?
I would say that that is trespass because your privilege is ending. Okay? Now, if you invite your mother-in-law to stay at the house and you don't like her and say, my God, I wish she'd go home, I don't know that she's trespassing your house. But if someone simply refuses to leave after you've made several arguments to them, then okay. Our first case of the evening is an interesting case, I think. This is one of the first cases I tried out of law school. I'm a brand new business lawyer. I'm all for myself. Very excited to begin my career as the next great one. I get sent, my client is the Consolidated Rail Corporation, now CSX. It's a great one. Okay. I get sent by Conrail, our firm's biggest client, down to a place called Calicoon, New York. Anybody ever been to Calicoon? Not a surprise, population 3,057. It's on the Delaware River, about as far in eastern New York as you can get from here. Okay? Very tiny little town. It does have a stoplight. Hey, stop. Okay. My very first case is going to be tried in Calicoon Municipal Court. I get to go to town court. Now, town judges do not have to be lawyers. Anybody do that? You don't have to be a lawyer to be a town judge. This judge was a telephone lineman. He comes into court. After I drive 3.5 hours to get to Calicoon to present my case, which I know is where, he comes in with his pole climbing clamp shoes and strikes them. Back then, before cell phones, telephone linemen had a phone they wore on their belt. They clip it onto the phone line and able to talk. He has it on his belt. Okay? I'm saying, man, oh man, I'm glad I'm lost. Phone line is my first year. I get into the courtroom. I am suing on behalf of Conrail because a person has trespassed on our land. This person bought a building which is on Conrail property. That is the building. It's a 100,000 square foot building. That's a big building. Okay? The average house is about 3,000 square feet. Okay? So just do the math. That's a big building. 100,000 square feet. This guy goes to a tax sale. That means their spouse is selling it for taxes. He buys a 100,000 square foot building for $50. What is the old adage?
Something's too good to be true. It probably is.
This building was owned by the Calhoun Creamery Association. The Creamery Association was an organization of farmers. A lot of dairy farmers in Calhoun, matter of fact, number one industry. They would make their milk, their cheese, and their cottage cheese, and then want to put it on refrigerated rail cars. So they got together and built this 100,000 square foot building to store all that in refrigerated areas so that the train could take it to places like New York City, wherever else, to be able to be sold. Conrail, back then it was the New York Central Railroad, would allow them to have this building on their site. Why? Because they wanted to transport their stuff. They made their money and put the stuff on their cars. But how does most milk get to market today? Trucks. They back the truck up to the dairy, they fill it up with the milk. I'm not an expert on this, but I've seen it. Okay, most dairy products today are transported by truck. So if the Creamery Association wasn't hiring the railroad to take their products, do you think the railroad wanted this big building on their property? No! Get off my land! Well, the Creamery Association, because now all these trucks are coming up from the individual farms, doesn't exist anymore. For business, no need to own a big building, no need to get together to be able to package our stuff, because we do it individually now. So the railroad sends Bob Calhoun to tell the man who bought this building for $50 to take it off our land. Now, I get to Calhoun, this is a slam dunk. The building is on our land. Okay? The building is on our land, no question. What is that? It's trespass. Get off my land. So I know on the law it's a slam dunk. Deal with the telephone line and agree with me. I'm hoping. But you never know in a court. So I walk into California County Court. The judge puts on his robe over his overalls with the phone on his side, still the boots with the spikes, doing like tap dances as he walks across the courthouse floor. The courthouse is about the size of like this part of the room. I say, Your Honor, I have all these papers here, I'm ready to roll, I can prove my first case, this is a slam dunk. The guy's name who bought the building for $50, right out of Central Casting, was named Clark. He says, I got another case in front of you, it will get to you, counselor. He said it was quite derision, okay? 24 years old, what the hell was it? The case in front of me was the case of the great stolen candy bar. Literally, it was Gertrude and her husband. I don't remember Gertrude's husband's name. Thank you all. Gertrude was about 750 pounds. I exaggerate maybe about 5 pounds or two, but she needed two chairs to sit down. Okay? She was a rather large man. The husband looked like she had eaten all his food. He was about 100 pounds overweight. Okay? This is the case in front of me. The judge says, Gertrude, why did you do this? Well, Judge, I was hungry. You know you can't steal the candy bar from the general store. You've done this before. I'm so glad I went on. Gertrude, don't
don't steal it anymore. The husband saying, Judge, I'll pay for it. It's not a problem. The judge allows the husband to pay for the candy bar. That's the case in front of me. I'm thinking I want to be in the next Clarence Darrow's great trial learning. And this is my first case. I get up to the judge. He says, well, counselor, I appreciate you coming all this way, but I talked to Bud and he's not coming down today. I said, not coming? That means I get a default judgment. That means I win automatically under the law. He says, well, I don't do those default things. I said, boy, this isn't looking good. Maybe I go out and sell insurance. I said, man, just leave the papers here. I figure I'm gone. Bud has called the judge. They're on a first day basis together. The case in front of me is dirty in the candy bar. I figure I'm screwed. And I'll come back and say, I can't even win this slam dunk case that I have for a judgment. He says, you know, by the way, Bud's been eating it. Okay, maybe it's looking a little better. He says, everybody knows that land owned by the railroad, but he didn't want to come today, and I didn't feel that day. I said, Judge, I drove 3.5 hours to get here. He says, I don't care. Good luck. Go back home. I might call you, I might not. I go back to my office, sit there thinking I'm a failure as a my first team. My senior partner, the guy who hired me, comes into my office. He says, how'd it go in Calhoun? You get it done? I said, well, I'm still waiting.
What do you mean you're still waiting? This is slam dunk. What's wrong with you?
Here, an excuse for a lawyer. He's not nice. I turned to him, I said, oh, okay, I don't think so. Figure it again. Maybe insurance is my pathway. 2 days later, I get a phone call. It's the judge. He says, thank you for coming down. I said, how's it hurt? He says, well, she's still flat. I said, well, I'm just kind of asking about the phone. He says, I signed the papers, they're in the mail. I'm shocked. Do I go in and tell my senior partner, or do I wait to make sure this isn't some kind of joke? I decide to wait. The papers come in. They're signed. I have won my action, my very first case for a check. Gave me a default judgment. But it gets worse. I thought I'd won. I do go in when I have signed papers and tell my senior partner I won a case. He said, well, that's what you should do. I get a phone call. 2 days later. Guess who's on the phone? But Bud is weeping on the phone. I got an estimate. It's going to cost me $10,000 to take down this building. It's a big building. That's after this what we call salvage value, after you sell the long building. He says, I bought it for $50. He says, I got a car. It's really a truck. It's worth $1,000. He says, I don't have $10,000. I said, I don't know what to tell you. He says, can't you help me? I said, I'm the guy who sued you. He says, I know I need your help. He's weeping on the phone. I'm thinking I'm like the most evil human being in the history of people. So I call up my client, who's the claim agent.
people who are the direct representative for Conrail. I tell them I've run the case, and is there any way we could just take back the building? He lost, he should have known. I said, that's kind of harsh. I said, he bought the building for 50 bucks. He should have done a title search. Yes, but he's an idiot. True. The judge recognized him as being an idiot, but I'm still feeling pretty bad because I'm bankrupting some guy. My boss comes in. Why the hell would you call Conrail and ask him to get out of the deal? I just asked him if it would be okay to keep the building and have them take it. He says, we get $30,000 a month from Conrail in fees. You get paid $25,000 a year as a lawyer. Do the math. Never call him again. Ouch. I don't listen very well. I can't sleep. All I literally am hearing one calling me in his dreams. So I do something very embarrassing. What do you think? I did not call the claim agent back. Guess who I called?
Right.
The president of Conrail, the highest officer, he's not in. Now with that, you say, who the hell are you? Sure. I speak to his secretary. The next day, I guess my senior partner in the room. I thought I told you, smoke's coming out of his ears. Horns are on the top of his head. He's not a happy guy. Didn't I tell you never to call again? I said, just follow him up. He said, I told you never to call. You make one more call to them, I am going to make sure you're cleaning out your desk. I said, this is wrong. He said, I don't give a shit. He said, matter of fact, you ought to clean out your desk now. I said, that's the way you feel. You leave my office. Doesn't confirm or deny. This is my first real job. Before that, I was working pushing shopping carts for Bright Job. I had gotten married a month before. Okay? How do you think Mrs. Farley would feel about this if she knew? I don't know. I'm like thinking about my economic future, what's going to happen to me, but I'm really devastated because there's a guy called who I've never met, who I don't know, who is an idiot. I don't know what to do. Who made this on? Teleport. Pretty much was the only thing I could do. I get a phone call. Guess who it's from? No. Lost stuff, Brian. President of Conrail. He said, I want to thank you. Making that guy tear down this building would have been the biggest public relations disaster our company ever experienced. Call the guy back and tell him that our crew will pay you down. And that he's responsible only to the extent of 50 bucks. So I call him back. Christmas came early to Calicoon, but was elated. How did you do that? You don't want to know. My senior partner comes in and starts screaming at me. I told you you'd be fired if you talked to Conrail. I told you not to call them. said, they called him. He did not have a sense of humor. He said, I have to clean up the bill. This is not hard. You know what I said to him? Fire me. I'll call the president back and tell him he did it. I said, your $30,000 will now be coming to the Farley Law. Make my day. I wouldn't recommend other people do it. I was, as they say, writing checks I couldn't catch. But I knew what I was doing was the right thing. The president of Congress called me back 2 days later. I'm sure I was the only 24-year-old lawyer in the country he was hired. You know what he said to me? Is there anything I can do for you? I said, yeah, maybe you can call my senior partner and save my job. You know what I'm saying? Consider it. Why do I tell this story? It is about objective. And I don't recommend any of you here doing what I did, the way I did, because it was pretty stupid and pretty error. But the moral of the story is, if you do the right thing, it will end up being the right thing professionally every time. I was 24 years old, I put my brand new career on the line for somebody I never met. But I knew it was wrong to crush this person. I was blessed that Conrail agreed. But guess what? My senior partner got a phone call from the president of Conrail. And he backed off for about 6 months or so. He's still with me. That's the moral of the story. Let's go on to Landers. Two more areas before we close. Zoning and eminent domain. Zoning is really where government comes in and says you can't use your property that way. It's not about nuisance. It's about society in general. Zoning came in the early 1900s as the result of expansion of population. When people were all living on small farms, there wasn't really a need for government to come in and say, we don't want you to farm that. Okay? But once people started living within close proximity of each other, simple types of ordinary uses of their property could hurt other property owners that wasn't a technical nuisance. So society in general started to do what we call planning and zoning. It's land use regulation. How you use your land, what you can do with it, and it tried to do something very important. It tried to keep compatible land uses together. Should a nuclear power plant be next to a grade school? Should a farm be next to a local swimming pool? Or a restaurant? Pig farms are kind of stinky. You want to eat your cheeseburger or your sushi with the aromatic odors of a pig. Doesn't work very well. Okay? So society said we're going to take certain land uses, industrial, residential, agricultural, commercial, and group them together. If a farm is next to another farm, you don't care if it's stinky. They both smell. If an industrial power plant is next door to a cement factory, you don't really care. If a grade school is next to another grade school, or next to some similar use like an office building, you don't care. If your house is next to another house in a residential area, it prevents problems. Now, can this be taken too far? Guaranteed it can. Planning and zoning are local laws. They're laws passed by municipalities. Cities, towns, and villages are given the right to pass planning and zoning ordinances. Cities, towns, and villages. Counties are not. Okay? States don't do it. It's all local. One of the reasons why local regulation has been upheld is because the courts have found that the locality is closest to the people they're regulating. So if you don't like those regulations, you literally can vote them out of office. It's close to the people they're regulating. They don't have to worry about some guy down in Washington, some guy in Albany, or some guy even at the county level. It's the local people. And the local people set the standards. What is the purpose? To prevent incompatible uses, to increase overall property values. If I own a house and the nuclear power plant comes in next door to me, my house is now worth the same amount of money. Why? Because although some people love nuclear power, I have no problem with it. Although some people love it, some people hate it. And suddenly the universe of people who want to buy my house is diminished. Supply and demand means I'm not going to sell my house for what I could have. It's also to channel development into patterns that serve larger social goals. When I was chairman of the Schenectady County Legislature, I got sued by a dirty bookstore. Why? Because I had no problem with what they were doing, but I didn't want them to do it in residential way. I could not constitutionally do anything to stop them. So what did I do? No. That would have been a great thing. That's eventually, remember, on the county, I didn't have the ability to do zoning. So what did I do? I worked with the city of Schenectady to go next door to that dirty store. I gave them county money to buy the building next door and put a police substation in that building. How many people want to go into a dirty bookstore next door to a police station? Really diminish their clientele. They sued me to say what you did was a violation of the First Amendment. I turned to the federal judge and said, I can put a police station in place I want. I'm not preventing them from being there. The fact that their clientele don't want to be around the police station ain't my problem. I'm all about protecting the community. I want more cops. Yes, but just about too bad there's no story. You lose if you don't like it. What's up with that? The city of Schenectady then said, good idea. We don't want these dirty bookstores in our neighborhoods. So they did a zoning change. You know where they put all the dirty bookstores? in the industrial areas. So they put it next to the power plants.
Okay. Power plants don't really care. All good to me. At all.
What are you going to do?
I thought that was a good idea to put it next to the power plant.
Sure. Neighborhood cheered me up. They loved it. Zoning limits your use of your property. It says you cannot have that residential house next to the nuclear power plant. It says you cannot put that farm next to the restaurant. Similarly, it says you can't take the restaurant next to the farm. Now, can the farm have a restaurant there? No. Okay. But I can't turn around and do these incompatible uses. They have to be compatible. That's what zoning laws do. Okay?
It's as simple as that. They try to put compatible uses together.
Where they run into problems is where they try to overreach. You know, if people stopped overreaching the government, it'd be a lot better in this world.
Amen.
Okay? And that doesn't matter what your political beliefs are. Just do what you people want you to do. If they turn around and say, okay, it's all good not to have the daycare center next to with their car, everybody kind of agrees with that. But when they turn around and say, you can't put that gingerbread molding on your house because it's not in conformity with every other house, unless you're living in a historic district where they're trying to keep everything the same, and you know that when you buy your house, guess what? That's an intrusion on you. And they shouldn't do it. So land use that provides for no real use other than hyper-regulation has been struck down by the courts. The courts want you to use your property as aggressively and as fully as you want to. Okay? Zoning laws have to have some public use. Not just, hey, we don't want to make sure that your house is different than that house. Guess what? We like individuality as Americans. That's okay. Okay? Every locality is entitled to, and by locality again, city, town, or village, is entitled to pass a zoning ordinance. They also, part of this, have to grant what we call variances. You are allowed to go away from the strict meaning of the law by applying to a board, it's called the Zoning Board of Appeals, and say, guess what? My family has operated a restaurant on this site since 1900. My grandfather died, who was operating the restaurant, so it wasn't operating for 5 years. You pass that zoning ordinance. I want to reopen the restaurant, which has been a staple in this community. Make a journey, you would say, zoning ordinance doesn't let you. If you had a pre-existing use, that means the restaurant was open, you could continue. But you stop. You turn around and say, Grandpa died! You can go to the Zoning Board of Appeals. And if the Zoning Board of Appeals does not grant you a variance, say, you can operate that. I know the strict statute by the local ordinance says you can't. We're saying you can't. If the Zoning Board of Appeals does not grant you that, you sue them. And 99% of the time, you will win. As long as you're not trying to overturn things that are part of the syndemic part of the ordinance. In other words, for the first time, you want to open that daycare center next to the nuclear power plant. Okay? There's no reason to do that.
Grandpa didn't own the daycare center, okay? It's a brand new one that nobody ever wanted to put there. That's unlikely to win. But the restaurant that was there, closed, and you want to bring back, that's going to win, okay? It's primarily about property rights. Okay, last thing before we go into our case. Eminent domain. The Constitution of the United States, from the day of our founding, has said two things. One, government can take your property. Yes, government can take your property. It's got to do it for certain reasons, but government can take your property. The second thing it said is if it does take your property, and again, it's got to be for certain reasons, we'll get into that later. If government takes your property, they have to pay you the fair market value. Not what you think it's worth, not what they think it's worth, but the fair market value, if you put it on the market and a buyer wanted to buy it, what they pay for. Now, the government can't take your property for any reason. It's got to be for what we call a public purpose. If the government wants to build a new highway, they can take your property. The New York State Thruway, where they built it in the 1950s, took an awful lot of people's houses. Okay? They can do it. The government wants to build a new school. Schools are overcrowded. They want to build a new school. They can take your property to build that new school. The government wants to put in a new sewer system. It can take a swipe of your front yard to put that sewer in. Again, if they take it for this public purpose, they have to pay you fair market value. They don't get it for free. They get it for what the public would buy it for. But it's got to be a public purpose. That is the critical thing that gets litigated the most. What is a public purpose? Is the public purpose just because the government wants it? No. It's got to have public utility. Okay? It's got to benefit the public in a public way. Okay? It's the Fifth Amendment of the United States Constitution, called the Takings Clause, that governs this. Okay? It says, again, you've got to take it for a public purpose, and you've got to pay fair market value.
Who determines fair market value?
The courts.
Can they hire an expert?
Yeah, but so can you. And you can get those court costs. Okay? Valuation is generally not the hardest part. It's whether you try to stop it whatsoever. Okay? Now,
before we get right into our case, yes, you got a question?
What are the circumstances for police power?
Sorry?
What are the circumstances for police power? You're not going to have to pay you?
Yes.
Police power, they necessarily don't have to promise you?
Yes, they have to pay you a letter of
relief.
Yep.
For police power?
Yep, it doesn't matter. Okay? They take your property, you own it, they have to pay you.
Even for police power?
Doesn't matter. There's no exception to police power in the United States Constitution. Okay? Doesn't matter for why they are taking it. If it's not a public purpose, they can't take it. But if it's a public purpose and they get it, they got to pay you fair market value. Okay? That comes to the Constitution. The argument frequently comes to whether or not it's a public purpose. clearly some of the things that we mentioned are public purposes. Roads, schools. Bob wants to build a new police station next to the dirty bookstore. That's a public purpose. Okay? So I was able to take that house. I paid for it,